So we'll begin. I'd like to refer to the books because there's a lot in them, and we should learn where to find information. So on this question of eating meat, who knows a good verse that relates to eating meat or not eating meat? Mm-hmm. Yes. So we'll read that one. Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, text 26. You can repeat. I think some of you know the verse. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. Yome bhakta prayachati. Taraham bhakti paritam. Asnami prayatat manaha. Lord Krishna says, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. So what are the four things that he says he will accept? Raise your hand. Excuse me. Raising the hand is the first step. The second step is being called on. Okay, now raise your hands. Is yours up or not? All right, we'll hear from you.
A leaf, a fruit, a flower, water.
Yes. Can you say now?
A leaf, a fruit, water, and flower?
Yes. But there's a condition. If you offer him a leaf, a fruit, water, or a flower, with what? Then he'll accept it.
Love and devotion.
Who said that? The answer is right. But you didn't raise your hand. But that's okay. We won't be so formal. But that's the right answer. Excuse me. All right. Purport. For the intelligent person, it is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, in order to achieve a permanent blissful abode for eternal happiness. Alright, well, to achieve a permanent blissful abode for eternal happiness sounds pretty good. And what is the necessity for that? Yes. It is essential to be in Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted even by the poorest of the poor without any kind of qualification. The only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee of the Lord. It does not matter what one is or where one is situated. The process is so easy that even a leaf or a little water or fruit can be offered to the Supreme Lord in genuine love, and the Lord will be pleased to accept it. No one, therefore, can be barred from Krishna consciousness, because it is so easy and universal. So, many of you may know that Srila Prabhupada underwent a very great struggle regarding some land in Juhu, Bombay. The owner of the land had offered it to Srila Prabhupada because he said he wanted to give it for some good cause. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, accepted the offer to buy the land at a very reasonable price. But it turned out that the owner was a very tricky person, and he had already taken money from someone else for the same land, and on some pretext he had canceled the agreement and kept the money of the other person. So, for a long time, we did not have a proper place where Srila Prabhupada could stay on the land. But Srila Prabhupada had a very staunch devotee named P.L. Sethi, who was constructing a house fairly near the temple in the Juhu Villa Parla development. And before the house was ready for him to move in with his family, he offered it to Srila Prabhupada and some disciples, because he knew there was that the Juhu land was under dispute and there was no proper place for Srila Prabhupada there. So one morning, Srila Prabhupada was in his sitting room, meeting with some senior devotees and maybe even some other friends and sympathizers. And he was on the second floor. And somehow, right while Srila Prabhupada was speaking with these devotees, a man walked into the room who we could identify as a laborer, because, you know, he was just wearing a little lungi and you know, it's just sort of like a little rough-looking, muscular. And so he just, we don't know how he knew that Srila Prabhupada was there, how he came in, how he came up to the second floor. But he came right into the room, walked up to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada would always sit on an asana on the floor and have a low table. And he brought a bunch of flowers and put them on the table and bowed down. And Srila Prabhupada was so moved by this that he could hardly speak. I mean, he was completely captivated by that act of devotion. You know, how could he know that Srila Prabhupada was there? But he, and then he quoted this verse. And he said that even Krishna accepts an offering of a flower made with love and devotion. And I'm just an insignificant living entity. So how much more this is to me? And he was very moved. He could only think about that offering and speak about that offering. So while we were staying at Mr. Sethi's house, which was named Vrindavan, one day the other party who had put down money for the land came to see Srila Prabhupada. He was a sort of elderly. He had his son also, but the head man was sort of an elderly Gujarati man from the Jain community. And he was a very shrewd businessman. So, you know, I received him downstairs and accompanied him upstairs into Srila Prabhupada's room. And he might have thought that Prabhupada is some simple sadhu and, you know, he'll be able to, you know, sort of take advantage of that and, you know, get what he wanted. So, you know, in a very, like, sharp and bold way, you know, without any formality, says, so, who will take the land, you or me? Prabhupada said, without skipping a beat, I will take it. And then Mr. Mehta, his name was Mr. Mehta. Mr. Mehta said, my claim is 2 lakhs, which is a lot of money. Again, without a moment's hesitation, Prabhupada said, my claim is 5 lakhs. So the man was like stopped, like he didn't know what to say. So it sort of agreed that that Srila Prabhupada would get the land and, you know, he would pay some amount for it. Which might not have been what Mr. Mehta had imagined when he came in the first place. So the meeting was concluded and I escorted Mr. Mehta down the stairs to the door, and he kept going like, your Guru Maharaj is pukka. Your Guru Maharaj is pukka. So then, and I'm saying this because Srila Prabhupada wanted someone to write a book about this history, and I believe that he wanted me to be the one to do it. And in any case, I'm the only one who was really there from the beginning to the end. So I'm not sure if I'll be able to tell everything in the book, because some things are quite part of the context of India. So what I'm going to say now, I hope it makes it in the book, but it might not, because you'll find out why. So the system in India was that there's number one and number two. That means like white money and black money, which means money that's accounted officially and money that's unaccounted, unofficial. So most land transactions involve a combination of both. And so Mr. Mehta, he wanted, I'm making up the figures because I don't remember exactly, but he wanted something like, I'm making this up, say 1 lakh, a lakh is 100,000, 1 lakh number one and 1 lakh number two. Now this was a very tricky situation because by receiving the money he would withdraw his claim on the land. So if we gave him the money first, there was a chance that he might not withdraw his claim in the court. And if he withdrew the claim first, then there is a chance, at least in his mind, that we would not pay him. The white money was not the problem, because that was all official. But the black money was a problem. So we were sitting in the lawyer's office. Tamal Krishna Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, Mr. Mehta, the lawyer, and myself. So this was a big dilemma. So the question was like, who's going to hold the bag of black money? Generally, they would keep it in a brown paper bag. So it didn't, like, not like, you know, the movies with the mafia, they have like a briefcase filled, but just like a brown paper bag. So it's like everything was stalled. There was like no solution. And then finally, Srila Prabhupada, in a very meek, sort of sheepish way, said, well, I can hold the bag. And then everyone immediately felt relieved. Yes, he can hold the bag. Everyone trusted Srila Prabhupada. No one would imagine that he wouldn't turn it over. So then, I guess Srila Prabhupada and I don't remember this, but one of the other devotees said that Srila Prabhupada and the elder Mr. Mehta were left in the room, in the lawyer's office, and then everyone else went to the courthouse, and the younger Mr. Mehta and his lawyer withdrew their claim, and then Prabhupada hadn't filled with the money. Um, All right, so now we'll discuss the one about father. So your basic question is, if Krishna is your father, what is your biological father's role? Is that your question? No.
Yes, that's the question, yeah.
Okay. And if you don't mind, speaking openly in front of all of us, what do you think his role should be?
So the father figure is someone who should like take care of the children and just be a father. Like, I feel like the word father has like this special meaning in society. And so, I can't really explain it. It's just like a father is a father, like a mother is a mother. It's like a father is a cornerstone of like a family sort of thing. I don't think I explained it very well.
No, that's good. Okay. That's good. All right. So now we'll read what Srimad Bhagavatam says on the subject. Does anyone know what verse I'm going to read? Okay, listen attentively. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's teachings, text 18. Gurur na sasyat, svajana na sasyat, Pita nasasyaj janani nasasyat Daivam natatsyan napatis chasasyan Namo chayadya samupetya mitrum Gurur nasasyat Svajano nasasyat Pita nasasyaj janani nasasyat Daivam na tatsyan, napatis chasasyan, namo chayadya samupetya mrityum. One who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. In other words, what is the duty of the guru, the father, the husband, the mother, and the worshipable relative? What is the duty, according to this?
To get liberation from the material body.
Yes, yes. To deliver their dependence from the repetition of birth and death. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are many spiritual masters, but Rishabhdev advises that one should not become a spiritual master if he is unable to save his disciple from the path of birth and death. Unless one is a pure devotee of Krishna, he cannot save himself from the path of repeated birth and death. So the first point is that one should not become a spiritual master unless he can save his disciple from repeated birth and death. And only one who is a pure devotee can be delivered from repeated birth and death. So that means the guru should train the disciples to become pure devotees so they can be delivered. Tyakta deham purnajanma naiti mameti sorjuna. One can stop birth and death only by returning home back to Godhead. However, who can go back to Godhead unless he understands the Supreme Lord in truth? Janma karma chame divyam. Evam yo veti tattvata. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not have to take birth again in this material world, but comes to me. In other words, goes back home, back to Godhead. So we have to understand Krishna. And bhakti mam abhijanati, Krishna can be understood only by bhakti, not by penance and austerities or independent study of books or anything except bhakti. We have many instances in history illustrating Rishabhdev's instructions. Now, Srila Prabhupada quoted this to me and one other disciple before the fifth canto was published. But Srila Prabhupada knew the scripture so well and the commentary so well that he quoted it to us, which I will relate to you after I read this. We have many instances in history illustrating Rishabhdev's instructions. Shukracharya was rejected by Bali Maharaj due to his inability to save Bali Maharaj from the path of repeated birth and death. Shukracharya was not a pure devotee. He was more or less inclined to fruitive activities. And he objected when Bali Maharaj promised to give everything to Lord Vishnu. Actually, one is supposed to give everything to the Lord because everything belongs to the Lord. Consequently, the Supreme Lord advises in the Bhagavad Gita 9:27, Yat karosi yad asnasi, yat juhosi dadasi yat, yat tapasyasi konteya, tat kurushva mad arpanam. O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you perform, should be done as an offering to me. That is bhakti. Unless one is devoted, he cannot give everything to the Supreme Lord. And unless one can do so, he cannot become a spiritual master, husband, father, or mother. This is a very clear indication of what the qualification of a guru or a father or a husband or a mother is, and that is they should be pure devotees. They should be prepared to give everything to Krishna. Similarly, the wives of the Brahmins who were performing sacrifices gave up their relatives just to satisfy Krishna. This is an example of a wife rejecting a husband who cannot deliver her from the impending dangers of birth and death. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj rejected his father, and Bharat Maharaj rejected his mother, Janani Nasasya. The word Daivam indicates a demigod or one who accepts worship from a dependent. Ordinarily, the spiritual master, husband, father, mother, or superior relative accepts worship from an inferior relative. But here, Rishabh Dev forbids this. First, the father, spiritual master, or husband, must be able to release the dependent from repeated birth and death. If he cannot do this, he plunges himself into the ocean of reproachment for his unlawful activities. What does reproachment mean? Does anyone know? Yes, Revati?
Chastising them.
Yeah.
Pointing out the mistake.
Yes, to sort of chide them, blame them, chastise them. First, the father, spiritual master, or husband must be able to release the dependent from repeated birth and death. If he cannot do this, he plunges himself into the ocean of reproachment for his unlawful activities. Everyone should be very responsible and take charge of his dependents, just as a spiritual master takes charge of his disciple, or a father takes charge of his son. All these responsibilities cannot be discharged honestly unless all these responsibilities of a spiritual master, father, husband, mother cannot be discharged honestly unless no, coming directly to what the verse says. I think someone said it, but it got lost. All these responsibilities cannot be discharged honestly unless one can save the dependent from repeated birth and death. Coming back to the original statement, the verse. Now, during the period when the land was in dispute in Juhu, Srila Prabhupada lived in different places that we arranged for him to stay. And many wealthy families had cottages or bungalows at Juhu Beach. which they would use on the weekends or on holidays or use for guests. And so one of the big families was the Katows. They had a big textile mill called Katow Mills, and they had other industries as well. So we arranged for Srila Prabhupada to stay in the Katows' bungalow. And at that bungalow, the sales agreement, not the sales agreement, actually, after a long, hard struggle, eventually we came to an agreement with the owner. And, you know, the registrar, you know, out of respect for Prabhupada, didn't make him come down to the registrar's office, but he came to Juhu. And so Mrs. Nair was in the room, and of course Srila Prabhupada and some of her supporters and Prabhupada's disciples and close friends. And yeah, so eventually the conveyance was signed, and there, Mrs. Sethi, you know, Prabhupada said, okay, now we must begin the construction fund. So Mrs. Sethi was wearing some gold bangles, so she took off her gold bangles and she said, okay, we'll begin the construction fund. And then there was a feast and some pretty modest fireworks, but more like firecrackers. And then afterwards, you know, when pretty much everyone had left, Srila Prabhupada reclined on his bolster and put up his knees and said, it was a good fight. And then he said, someone should write a book about it. So, a couple of days later, one devotee named Mahamsa and I were in Srila Prabhupada's room at the Katow's bungalow. And Mahamsa also came from quite a good family, a Parsi family. I believe his name was Nosa Mancherji. And they had a big business of hoardings called Selvel, people who've lived in Bombay or India, they may know these Selvel billboards. So it's quite a thing for him, you know, to leave his family and become a devotee. And, of course, the family was very attached to him. And so, without any discussion from our side, maybe Srila Prabhupada just reading our minds or knowing our hearts, but he quoted this verse, Guru Nasasya. And he said that, you know, Sridhar Swami, the great commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, gave examples. And the idea is that if you cannot deliver your dependent from the repetition of birth and death, you're not really a guru, you're not really a father, you're not really a husband, you're not really a mother. And then Srila Prabhupada said that Sridhar Swami gave these examples, that it's the duty of the disciple to obey the order of the guru. But when Sukracharya ordered Bali Maharaj not to keep his promise and give everything to Vishnu, Bali Maharaj rejected, he disobeyed his instruction. But that was not a fault, because he was not acting as a real spiritual master, because he wasn't helping his disciple to become a pure devotee. And then he said, it's the duty of the son to protect the father if the father is attacked. So when the Sringadev attacked Hiranyakasipu, Prahlad Maharaj did not try to defend his father. And to the contrary, he offered prayers of glorification to Lord Nrsimhadev, who killed his father. But that was not a fault in Prahlad, because his father was not a real father, because he was not delivering his dependent from repeated birth and death. So similarly, it's the duty of the son to obey the mother. What did I just say, Abhay? Were you listening? I'll say it again.
The duty of the son to obey the mother.
Did you hear that? What is it?
It's like the duty of the son to obey his mother.
Mother. Oh, father also. Mother also. Okay, it's the duty of the son to obey the order of the mother. But when Kaikeyi, you know who Kaikeyi is? When Kaikeyi ordered Bharat to sit on the throne instead of Lord Ramachandra, he refused. But that was not a fault, because she wasn't acting as a real mother, because she wasn't helping him to become saved from repeated birth and death. She wasn't helping him to be a pure devotee. And then the last example were the Brahmins, excuse me, the wives of the Brahmins, who were performing a Vedic sacrifice. This is in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. They were performing a Vedic sacrifice. And Krishna and Balaram and their friends were hungry. And so Krishna told the boys that they should approach these Vedic Brahmins and ask them for some food. And they even gave an explanation why, according to the rules of the yajna, that the food could be given. And he said, but these Brahmins are very proud of their positions as Brahmins, and they actually won't want to give charity to anyone who's not a Brahmin. But I'm known as a Vaishya, as the son of Nanda, and Balaram is known as a Kshatriya, the son of Vasudev. So don't ask in my name, but ask in his name. So the boys went, and the Brahmins didn't want to give. And the boys were so innocent and so guileless, they just came out and said, Krishna and Balaram are in the forest, and they're hungry and we're hungry. So they refused. So the boys went back, and Krishna encouraged them that is the way of begging, that you cannot expect to be successful every time. That's the same is true of distribution. So then he said,
Okay, now go back to their wives. Their wives are great devotees, and they may agree. So they went back, and the wives took the food to bring to Krishna and Balaram. Now the husbands didn't like it. They said, no, you can't go, you can't do this. But they disobeyed their husband. So it's the duty of the wife to obey the husband. But it was not a fault of the wives of the Vedic Brahmins to disobey their husband, because they weren't real husbands, in the sense that they weren't helping their wives to become liberated from the repetition of birth and death. So Srila Prabhupada cited these instances to Mahamsa Prabhu and me. And he said, you know, so you've left your fathers and mothers to come and serve me, serve Krishna. But that is not a fault, because they're not real mothers and fathers if they're not helping you to be delivered from the repetition of birth and death. So that was what he told us. Now, it may happen that someone that someone is a husband or a father or a mother, and is began that before understanding the importance of Krishna consciousness, but still you know, it's never too late. It's never too late. And also we shouldn't take this as a excuse or justification for the children disobeying their parents or the wives disobeying their husbands. Because that could be very disruptive. That's really not the idea. And the examples given here are of pure devotees. They're all pure devotees. Bali Maharaj was a pure devotee. Bharat was a pure devotee. The wives of the Brahmins were pure devotees. Prahlad was a pure devotee. But for us conditioned souls who are working towards liberation, we should stay within the family and observe the normal etiquette within the family. But at the same time, everyone should try together to become pure devotees of Krishna, so they don't have to take birth again. Yes.
Like in some of those cases, like the Brahmins, were they following some form of Shastra Maharaj, or is it just they were just hard-hearted? Like, you know, is there anywhere in any Puranas or any instruction that they are following that says that you only give, like as a Brahmin, you only give charity to Brahmins? Is that something that they are following based on some instruction? It may not be pure, but at least it's like somewhere stated in the Vedas among a million categories we have.
Well, the benefit of giving to a Brahmin is supposed to be greater than the benefit of giving to someone else. But the point is that Krishna and Balaram are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you're supposed to give everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they miss the whole point. You know, same thing with Bali Maharaj.
But he gave everything. But his guru was seeing in a mundane way that, you know, that I'm getting so much from Bali Maharaj. And if he gives everything to Vishnu, then what would be left for me? So that means he wasn't ready to give everything to Vishnu. So that's a very important point, that we have to be liberated from repeated birth and death. We have to be pure devotees. And pure devotee means ready to give everything to the Lord. So Sukracharya wasn't ready to do that. But Bali Maharaj was ready to do that. So same with the Yajna Brahmins, they weren't ready to do it, but their wives were ready.
Also is because the children or the disciple were liberated, does it mean the parents get benefit? How by Prahlad Maharaj, Hiranyakashipu got benefit?
Yes.
Did the Brahmins and others, did they get the benefit simply by being associated with those Vaishnavas?
Well, they did. It's not clear about Shukracharya. Later, the Yogic Brahmanas understood that they had made a mistake and that their wives were actually better than they were. And within their hearts, they thought, we should go to Krishna and Balaram and surrender. But they were afraid of Kamsa. So they didn't go. But for a while they did have that, you know, what's the use of all this stuff? We couldn't recognize the Supreme Personality of God. Of course, Kaikeyi was definitely benefited because when Rama returned from Ayodhya, I mean, returned to Ayodhya, and Bharat gave him the throne. And so, you know, Ramachandra was so magnanimous that he, you know, he treated Kaikeyi like a mother. And she was somehow purified by the whole. And Hiranyakasipu, he was purified by being killed by the nails of the Lord. So they got benefit.
In case of Mother Kaikeyi Maharaj, is it in the pastime of Lord Ram, every single time he appears, would they appear also? Is it like how Pandavas are there? Krishna says, like, you know, I have spoken this to you so many times, like, you know, the same person as Arjuna is appearing every single time in hearing.
I believe so, because Rama, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna, they're all Vishnu Tattva, they're not ordinary living entities. And Vishnu Tattva means that the person who's playing the part of the mother must be a pure devotee. And that particular type of position as a pure devotee cannot be played by just anyone. Like when Lord Chaitanya appeared, his mother Sachi was Yashoda. Yeah. So, yeah, one can have a parental relationship, but one cannot become the direct father or mother because there's only certain eternal associates are in those positions.
Maharaj, you were talking about how there are, when relationships, they don't actually make one Krishna conscious, even though it's a general rule to obey, you can actually break it if they are not helping you Krishna consciousness. And you gave for examples. My question is, in Ramayana Dasaratha, he actually made a promise to Kaikeyi, like saying, okay, I will give you a promise. And when Kaikeyi asked Dasaratha back saying, I want Ram to go to, he could have easily broken that vow, because the higher principle is to say, okay, this is the Supreme Personality, we need to protect him. So I wouldn't send him to, it's okay even if I break with my vow, but I wouldn't send Ram to forest. Why did Dasara Maharaj give so much importance to his vow over sending Ram to forest for 14 years?
Well, that's a good question. But the Ramayana is full of ideals. And it's and so Dasaratha was acting as ideal. Well, Ram was ideal, Lakshman was ideal, Kausalya was ideal, Sita was there, all ideal. But he was, you know, showing the importance of keeping your word. But that point that comes up even in the Ramayana, that why did he, you know, for this, you know, in a sort of critical way, maybe he was even criticizing himself, but in a sort of critical way, you know, for the sake of that wicked woman, you know, Ram had to be banished and suffer, and, you know, out of attachment for that wicked woman, he kept his word to her. So that issue does come up. But you know, Dasaratha is really a pure devotee, so we should be, you know, we should see the virtue of what he did in keeping his promise.
So in many pastimes of the Lord, there is always like this apparent discrepancies. Like when Krishna was there in the battlefield Kurukshetra, on one side he is with Arjuna, on the other side Mother Subhadra's son Abhimanyu is being killed, but he is there, he knows everything, and this is Yoga Maya son, Abhimanyu is not ordinary. But and at the same time, the Lord says that those who have taken shelter, you know, they are always protected. It's not that the body, but it's how Abhimanyu was died, you know, surrounded by all the bad characters and improperly being killed. So, but yet, it seems that nothing happens without the element of the Lord, and they have a purpose or a reason. Sometimes it's hard to understand in this particular case, like Yoga Maya. I mean, the Lord, she arranged all the pastimes, and it's not ordinary. And I don't seem to understand why that even happened that way. He chose to protect only the Pandavas, and then, you know, Pandava sons or others, he allowed him to be killed. Although they are pure devotees, I'm sure, at least in the case of Abhimanyu, he brought him up and he trained him.
Well, he did say Parikshit also.
Yes.
But, you know, being a pure devotee doesn't mean that the Lord protects you materially.
Yes.
I mean, if you think, oh, I'll become a pure devotee and then the Lord will protect me materially, well, that's not really a pure devotee, because that's more like a business transaction, that if I surrender to Krishna, he'll preserve what I have materially and carry what I lack materially. But that applies spiritually, and that purport to that verse, Yoga Kshema Bhajamyaham, Srila Prabhupada explains that applies spiritually.
because even a pure devotee will leave his body. You know, everyone will eventually leave his body. So it doesn't mean Krishna is not protecting them. He is protecting them. And that change of body is just a change of body. It's just nothing more. You know, it doesn't mean Krishna is not protecting him. It just means that Krishna is with him as he proceeds to his next service.
So it doesn't really matter if they, like in the case of Abhimanyu, if he dies and then surrounded by impious people, you know, all those people who are shooting arrows and stabbing him. I mean, they were pretty bad characters in Mahabharata. But so what happens, or how one leaves the body, it doesn't really matter, but in consciousness, they're always protected.
Yeah, for a pure devotee, it doesn't matter.
There's no distinction between a good death and a bad death, no such thing. It is purely on the spiritual platform that takes place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's... Yes, sir.
Sorry, sir. The question for me is, all the materialistic things are because of your karma. The spiritualistic thing is because of your love and affection to Krishna. Is it correct?
But what do you mean by material?
Okay, I have a house, I have a thing, everything. This is because of I go through some problem or something like that. Those are all because of my understanding. It's because of my own karma. How I got into this Krishna consciousness is because of my spiritual nature.
Well, when you become Krishna conscious, you take everything as Krishna's mercy. Everything's Krishna's property. Do you accept that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the karma is also belongs to him.
But when you surrender to Krishna, then it's not karma anymore. The karma is... But even if you take it as karma, it doesn't make any difference because you belong to Krishna and everything belongs to Krishna. So if you have a house, it belongs to Krishna, it should be used in Krishna's service. Your body, say, okay, you got your body because of your karma, let's say. But now you've surrendered to Krishna. You know that body doesn't belong to you, it belongs to Krishna. So you should use it to serve Krishna.
Even if you go through the body, go through many hardness, many difficulties,
yeah.
And how do you take it? I'm, for example, somebody with a Krishna consciousness, and still he go through many problems, many hardness, and so that's because of my karma or because the why I should pray Krishna if I'm going through all those things?
Well, we pray to Krishna because that's our natural position to pray to Krishna. But pure devotees don't pray to Krishna to relieve them of hardships. They pray to Krishna to engage them in his service. And so whether, you know, in good fortune or bad fortune, in good health or bad health, in happiness or distress, the devotee serves Krishna. And his only prayer is to serve Krishna. He's not praying to get relief from suffering. He's not praying to get material comfort. So you said if you still have to suffer hardships, is that what you said? If you still have, what's the use of praying?
Well, you know, if you do all spiritual stuff, all best of the best, good of the good, still some people they go through hardship, some people it's easy. And I assume that somebody goes through hardship is because of the karma, or why somebody is...
No, it could be Krishna's mercy. Could be Krishna's mercy. Because sometimes we need to be put in difficulty to take more shelter of Krishna. Sometimes if things are too easy and too comfortable, we think we don't need Krishna. But if we're in difficulty, we realize we need Krishna. So it's not necessarily so that the difficulties are a result of our karma. If one is a devotee, the difficulties may be the result of Krishna's mercy. You don't like that.
I actually, I read last week or 2 weeks ago, there was a Back to Godhead magazine. I assume that's what they were quoting about your books, I believe. What are the devotee was so, he had a big disease or whatever, in the hospital, he's suffering. And,
Yes.
And you are, Maharaj, Guru Maharaj goes there and asks, how are you? And the devotee is telling, I'm very, very far suffering. And they told, suffer happily. That's what the Krishna, suffer happily. That's the day, I think you, I don't know what this thing. Suffer happily. That was the...
Well, there's a saying, pain is mandatory, but suffering is optional. In other words, the pain is going to come, but if you're going to suffer or be happy, that depends on you. Yes, Revati?
Thank you very much.
So you were talking about that ocean of approaching. For those who become a guru or a father or a mother and are not qualified to deliver their dependents. And also, at some point, the dependent has some say in the matter. If they choose to follow, or if they choose to take what's been given.
Yeah.
So there could be a case where the parent is imperfect in their ability to deliver the dependent, but the dependent is also unwilling to even take advantage of what has been given. So how much rapprochement does the parent have, and how much can they feel that, you know, you gave all the examples of how you can reject the parent that is not delivery, but when it comes to the role of it's your responsibility to deliver, when can you let go of the dependent who's not wanting to follow?
What was the thing about let go?
Like, it's your responsibility to deliver the dependent in all those categories, the guru, the father, the mother. But when can they give up that responsibility if the dependent does not want to accept their attempts to deliver them, their efforts and on their behalf to help them become Krishna conscious?
Well, you know, I'm sure we pray for them and, you know, hope for some change in them, or maybe some change in circumstances that will make them more open when they're not open. But that's if you've done your duty the best you can, then I wouldn't say that you're destined for the ocean of rapprochement. Because like you said, they have their free will. I mean, Srila Prabhupada had a son who sort of, he was very intelligent, but he was like a little crooked. but very intelligent. So he said about us that our fathers were like Hiranyakashipus, but we became like Prahlad. And his father was like Kashyapa Muni. But he became like Hiranyakashipu. So that's...
Wouldn't it also be that you may be in a situation where you have dependents that are not wanting to take up the process or follow what you might hope? And you just said that, okay, you can accept that they have their own karma, they have to take some responsibility for the decisions they make. And you also said that the parent, or the responsible person, the devotee that wants to be responsible for their dependents, is ready to pray for them, understand their situation, and be somewhat, I would imagine, somewhat detached. In other words, you have to say, okay, I've done what I can, and I'm going to continue to care, but maybe my caring is going to be in a different form.
Yeah. I mean, the detachment should be there in any case.
Yeah.
Because nothing belongs to us.
Yeah.
Everything belongs to Krishna. So we're taking care of this soul as a service to Krishna. But we can only do what we can do.
Yeah. So we do what we can, and we continue to do what we can, and that, depending on circumstance, may take different forms over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Yes, Kareem?
This is more a question about qualifying the idea of a pure devotee. I was listening to a lecture from Ravindra Sarup Prabhu, and he was saying that his qualification of being a pure devotee or trying to be a pure devotee is through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, following his instructions. And then we see Srila Prabhupada takes the same mood and says, you know, he's just serving his spiritual master. But then, you know, in our current time, we're taking instructions from our spiritual authority, our managerial authorities, and their situation may not always be so strong, and we have to discriminate what is the appropriate means of, you know, acting in line with what it means to be a pure devotee. So I'm just trying to understand more in depth the qualifications of a pure devotee, so it's more clear to discriminate what is the appropriate conduct and the right way to go about living your day-to-day life.
Well, in the context of ISKCON, people have to, you know, devotees have to follow the authority. That's in any organization. You can't say, well, this authority is not a pure devotee, so I won't follow him. I mean, when Srila Prabhupada was present, he was very clear that you have to follow the authority. And if someone asks, well, what if the authority doesn't give a right instruction? you know, you'd say, well, you have to follow it anyway. And, you know, I will either rectify the authority or remove the authority. And then say, well, what about my advancement? And Prabhupada said, well, your advancement will be the same. So that was the general rule. Now, you know, ISKCON is a big society. If you feel you can't work under a certain authority, then you could maybe find another authority that you can work under. But you can't say, you can't go around looking at every authority and trying to judge if they're pure devotees or not, and then say, oh, you're not a pure devotee, so I'm not going to follow you. Prabhupada wrote one letter in which he said, because the disciple who wrote him was saying, you know, so and so is a pure devotee and others are not, and therefore only he should be followed and not others. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, you know, anyone who's sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master is a pure devotee. And if you say this one should be followed and others should not be followed, then you'll create factions. And he said, you know, anyone who's sincerely following the spiritual master is a pure devotee. So, and then the other thing is, it doesn't mean that you, that, like, one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, whether, you know, yeah, we have to follow the authority, but doesn't mean that the authority is right. And Prabhupada said, you may still maintain the conviction that on a particular point you were right, but you still have to follow the authority. And he gave the example that someone's driving the car and you think that there's a better way to get to the destination. So you tell the driver, you know, I think it's better if we go this way. And the driver may or may not agree to follow your suggestion. And you have to accept it because he's in the driver's seat. Now you can still maintain the view that if he would have gone the way you said, it would have been better. That's not wrong. But still you have to, you know, you have to go along with the driver. Because the driver's behind the wheel. Understand? Okay. And another time, you know, Prabhupada, when there was like a lot of sort of criticizing and fault finding in Mayapur at the meetings, so Prabhupada said, you know, you cannot follow properly and I cannot follow properly. But if you simply find fault with me and I simply find fault with you, then our Krishna consciousness will be lost. And he said, you know, therefore Mahaprabhu is given the holy name, Harinama, Harinama, Harinama. We cannot do other things so perfectly, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given the holy name. We just take shelter of the holy name and avoid offenses.